everyone, and welcome back to our podcast, Our Two Cents. Let's chat. As always, I'm joined by Vivek, and today we are talking about the ongoing conflict, or the current conflict, I guess, between Russia and Ukraine, and what's currently happening right now in February 2022. Our AdSense for this episode is going to this platform known as Support Hospitals in Ukraine. The website is called uahospitals.org. Sorry, that took me a minute. And I believe the funds from this are going to Vivek.
Basically, there's we can post about this too, but there's a map and there's a few hospitals in key cities with a high population, and it distributes the funds that they rake in through those hospitals. So directly to the Ukrainian hospitals, yes.
Also, I would like definitely visit the website yourself, and if you can, personally donate, because it is like, you know, it's vital that these people get these funds. And so, yeah. Do you want to start by giving us a brief history of what's going on? I mean, what has led up to what's going on?
So it's actually not as complicated as it seems. There's a lot of economic, you know, there's a lot of, you know, little calculated policy moves, but really the baseline is, so in 1991, Ukraine was created. That was a little bit after the fall of the Soviet Union. And a bunch of stuff happened, again, super relevant, and you should take the time to go learn about it on your own. But basically fast forward to February 2014, I think it was, when Russia seized Crimea. Now, Crimea is a little peninsula, I believe, actually. I want to just look it up right now. But it's basically part of the Ukrainian peninsula. Well, is Ukraine a peninsula? Anyway, it's near the country of Ukraine. And so when Russia annexed that territory, it was kind of like a violation of international sort of, I don't want to say norms, but the entire international community was outraged, and this, like, the UN condemned it, and so did the EU. And then in 2019 was the next big event, which was the current president, President Zelensky, was elected president of Ukraine. And you may have seen that he was, you know, saying things like he's not going to leave the country and stuff recently during the invasion. And after that, so in December 2021, Ukraine was trying to become part of NATO. Becoming part of NATO would allow Ukraine to, you know, receive economic help, military help if needed, if something like this did happen. But Russia shot it down, and it was, you know, it was rejected. They're not part of it. Finally, in February 21st of this year, Russia recognized those two regions of Ukraine that broke away, the separatist regions of Ukraine that broke away, Donetsk, I think that's how you say it, and Luhansk. Again, I think that's how you say it. They both broke away from Ukraine. And the Ukrainian government thought, you know, the breakaway was conducted by, you know, Russian-backed terrorists in the regions. Because of this, Putin then recognized these territories as independent states. And then he sent in troops to, you know, quote, quote, keep the peace. And then finally, we're up to a few days ago on February 24th, when Russia launched the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. I'm not exactly up to date with how much territory they've taken. I definitely know for sure they are in the capital of Kiev, and they are shelling the Western Ukrainians as well. So
I was going to say, like, I think I'm going to go in and fill in some of the gaps that you missed. But yeah, so after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, as Vivek was saying, Ukraine became independent. And I feel like a lot of people, even to this day, don't really know the difference between the USSR and Russia. They sort of think it's the same thing, but it's not. The Soviet Union was a much more vast region of just land, basically. And then that obviously got divided into different countries and different nations, and Russia is one of them. And so ever since Ukraine gained independence, a lot of imperialistic thinking Russians and leaders alike, from the first Vladimir Putin to the current one, have always felt that, you know, the downfall of the Soviet Union was a huge, massive geopolitical mess. And to some extent, sure it was, but there's always been a little bit of resentment towards Ukraine because they always believed that Ukrainian land was, which actually belonged to Russia because of, you know, how the Soviet Union was banned land-wise. And then again, as Vivek said, there have been ongoing oil disputes, economic disputes, militaristic disputes between either countries. And it makes sense because I feel like this is, we see it a lot between two countries or nations that share similar cultural ideologies and, you know what I mean, ethnic backgrounds. We see it a lot that they face conflict, especially if they're seen as two separate nations.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, in 2014, what was formerly considered Ukrainian territory, the Crimea Peninsula, was overtaken by the Russians, and that sort of created, you know, evident conflict.
Yeah.
And then again, as he said, in 2019, there was some conflict when the current president, Zelensky? I don't know how to pronounce the first name. When Zelensky became president, of course. And so the other thing was when Zelensky did become president in 2019, from the very get-go, it was clear that he wanted to unite with the Western countries and he wanted to be as independent of Russia as possible. And, you know, Vladimir Putin definitely did not like that, because if anything, he was looking to unite the two and sort of conquest Ukraine. Yeah. And Zelensky's sort of relentless attempts to get in with NATO and to sort of endorse the West definitely upset him. And then this all of this tension between oil disputes and sort of land wars and being economic rivals, it all added up. And yeah, this month he officially announced that they had invaded Ukraine, and he declared war, basically. That's where we're at. And I know you just talked about how they definitely have invaded Kiev, but I also know from, I think, 2 days ago, it was confirmed that they, I'm sure we're all familiar with the Chernobyl nuclear incident in Ukraine many, many moons ago, but it, you know, really wasn't that long ago because radioactivity still lives on there. But the Russians have also taken over where the former nuclear power plant was. And that place is normally, it's fenced off because of the, you know, radioactive elements that are still remnant there. But since the Russians have sort of taken over the Chernobyl power plant, radiation levels in Ukraine have also increased. And I feel like people overlook that because we're so focused on war and the military aspect of it. But like, this also is war. The fact that radiation levels are increasing, and as a result, Ukrainian citizens are dying left and right because of, you know, this, the added weaponry and whatever else that's going on.
Right. So basically that's the, you know, history of it all up to present day. And so present day, there has been some responses from some countries. So places like Germany, I'm sure other places in Europe or Western Europe have done something as well. But the most famous example that I can think of is Germany halting the pipeline construction with Russia, and the U.S. sending, I think, 5,000 or 7,000 troops it was, to Germany in case there needs to be, you know, strike. But then I think the thing that we were both talking about just now before the episode was that President Biden held a press conference. Do you remember when it was? It was recently.
Two days ago.
Yeah. And he basically detailed how, you know, or he unveiled all his sanctions that he was levying against the Russian government, and how they would, you know, cripple the Russian economy, and how he was dispatching some troops to Germany just in case. But he also thought that it would be, you know, the sanctions would be enough. He was like, okay, if we hit them, obviously, where it hurts with regards to money, that should be enough to deter them. And a lot of people have criticized that because they're like, you know, first of all, if you were even, you know, doing that the full way, that would be great. But you are reluctant to freeze assets controlled by Putin himself and other Russian oligarchs. And so basically, it's all been a mess. And it kind of seems like no one is helping the Ukrainians. One thing to notice is I saw this morning, too, that fighters from Oh my God. Was it Georgia or Belarus? I think it was Belarus.
Well, I think also I forgot to mention that those are the two lands that sort of the Russian army is trying to overtake first,
oh, yeah.
right? Georgia and Belarus.
Right. Yes, that is, yeah. yes. Yeah. And so obviously, you know, considering the fact that...
Which are also under Ukrainian jurisdiction.
Right. Well, considering the fact that they're, you know, both being kind of bullied by Russia.
Focused on, yeah. Yeah.
They have created a sort of unsteady alliance. So I saw this morning some soldiers from Belarus are also helping to fight against the Russians. So basically it's all looking not so great.
To say the least.
To say the least. It's looking not so great. Do you have anything to add?
I was going to say, I feel like the way that we're talking about this and maybe our tone makes it seem as if it's not so serious and as if it's any other kind of war, but this really is. Like, when people are making World War III jokes, it's like, no, it's a very real possibility from the way...
Yeah, they're not jokes.
Especially from the way, like, Russian relationships with the rest of the world affect... For take the U.S., for example. Our oil prices, our gas prices have already gone up. You get what I mean? Because that's just how our economic ties with Russia are sort of connected to. So this is all-encompassing. And you think, gas prices went up. But it's like, economically, we are already coming out of a recession. So the fact that this is even a thing, like, it very much sort of channels into us becoming... more involved than ever with Russian and Ukrainian relationships and whatnot, and especially with Zelensky's constant sort of going to the press and talking about getting involved with NATO. I feel like the pressure is definitely building up for Western nations and also, you know, the North Atlantic countries to sort of get involved more heavily. And I know even Vivek, you wanted to talk about this a couple weeks ago, and then I was like, let's talk about whatever we talked about last time, like climate change or whatever, because even then, you know, it was too early to say, but even now it's too early to say. So, yeah, this is kind of the state we're in.
And then I think one more thing that just happened, I think I just wrote about this morning, is that two things actually, Zelensky agreed on Sunday, so yeah, that's this morning, to talks with Russia without preconditions, even as Putin was, you know, further escalating tensions. He was placing his nuclear forces on alert. I don't know if you saw that this morning. And so basically it's seeming like the Ukraine really is running out of options, right? They have, you know, a limited army compared to the Russians. I saw something yesterday that suggested they have like about 50% of the military power as the Russians. So basically there's, you know, not really any sort of, you know, advantage for them. It seems like the Russians are going to be, if it were just statistics wise or probability wise, the Russians would, you know, definitely win. And that's, I think, again, why many people have criticized lots of Western or more Western nations for not, you know, sending troops or not helping out.
I was going to say, and like, it's almost like, for me, the criticism is also, it comes from the fact that like, this isn't something that was just out of the blue and, you know, we were unsuspecting it. It was very much calculated. It was very much premeditated. And I feel like that's one of the reasons that Western countries or nations under the NATO alliance are facing so much pressure and scrutiny, is because we've known from since, you know, Putin first stepped into his term that this is what he was sort of looking into. We knew he was planning to overtake Ukraine and other, you know, Ukrainian territory like Belarus, like Georgia, like Crimea. So yeah, it was very much not unexpected.
Well, and again, going back to that thing, like we wanted to talk about a few weeks ago, right? So even then, you know, there was something there. It wasn't like, you know, completely just, this came out of the blue and his troops were suddenly there. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, or maybe even a month ago, that I was reading in the news about how Putin was lining his troops up at the border. So it's not like this, it's not like there's no time for a response, or that, you know, this has come out of nowhere. This has been seen, especially with, you know, the capability of these countries to, you know, see these sort of things happening.
I think we should also, like, it's important to note that, like, this is happening now, and it didn't happen before, because even like former Ukrainian presidents were very much under Putin's play. They were, you know what I mean? Oh, their ideologies definitely lined up with what future he imagined for Russia and Ukraine. And so when Zelensky was elected, right, it was sort of like a wake up call.
Like, I'm losing hold.
Yes. Because Zelensky made it very clear that he wanted, you know, little to no alliance with Putin, and their ideas for the future of Ukraine definitely did not line up. Because Zelensky, you know, his heart has been on aligning himself, aligning Ukraine with NATO and with the US and the UK, and less with Russia. And so that's obviously a trigger point for someone like Putin.
And then I think one more thing to say is that, you know, people are being, you know, evacuated out of, or I don't actually know if they're being evacuated out, but I do know that.
I actually don't think they are, at least the volume that they should be in, definitely.
Right.
Like, we have not hit the point in this war yet where there's a refugee crisis. We're still at, like, you know.
Right. Right. And that's one of the things people were saying too, is that, like, I think this morning I read about, it was something about how even at the border where people are trying to escape, there are forms of discrimination. Now, I don't remember the full context of the article, but I believe it was talking about how, like, even in the midst of something like this, you know, all sorts of bigotry are still present. Again, I wish I remembered what it said, because then I couldn't.
I mean, that's a constant.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? And it's like, no matter what the conflict is, no matter what the topic is, that sort of discriminatory biases will always be there.
Right. Can I just say, I saw, who was it? The chief minister of one of the states in India. The other day I saw a news story about him welcoming Indian people from Ukraine back home. And he said, like, welcome back to the motherland. And he was joking around with them. And I just thought, like, how insensitive is that to say? Like, you have people who have been, you know, kicked out of their country, right? Or not kicked out, but, you know, have had to leave, because if they don't leave, what's going to happen, right? And you're saying jokingly to them, welcome back to the motherland? Like, for what reason?
It's like, some people are thinking this is like, some people, meaning that chief minister, is thinking this is like some kind of party.
Oh.
And it's like, yay, you guys are back, we're reunited. Like, no.
It's like, no, that's not, you know, that's not the mood here.
The other thing, we're talking about it, and I feel like even as we're talking about it now, I feel like maybe we're not conveying the seriousness of what this actually means. And I feel like even by the time this episode comes out a week later, you know, we're going to get more information about what's going on, and then it's all just going to be so much more
the situation
worse.
Could, like, and probably will be completely different.
At the very beginning of the pandemic to my aunt, when she was like, I wonder how long we're going to be in quarantine. And I was like, well, it's only going to get worse before it gets better. And damn, that was the understatement of the century. And now
how true that was.
Like, I can't even, I'm going to stop myself from saying that now, because I feel like it's just going to be, it's going to be,
you're
going to
will it into reality.
Yeah.
Back to India for a second. I saw that the Ukrainian president urged Modi the other day in an open letter, to, you know, send troops, send backup, and help out, with, you know, the conflict. And I didn't see any response from Modi, but this morning I saw that Modi said something about these two lip-syncing sisters from, I think it was from Tanzania. It was some country that started with a T. Are there any other sister with a T? I don't know. But okay.
So, Thailand.
I mean, in Africa.
Oh.
But he pointed out these two sisters who lip synced to songs from that country in Africa. And he was like, more youngsters should aspire to be like this. And I almost like cackled because it's like, what are you doing? What? You're the leader of the second biggest country on earth. And you
saying, I told you about this. When, okay, like, again, this just goes to show how much of like a circus act or political atmosphere globally and, you know, nationally has become. Mm-hmm. But Vivek, around Valentine's Day, like, I don't know if you sent it to me or if you posted it, like, the Democrats, mm-hmm. like, the official Democrats account posted this, like, Valentine's, I don't even know, something about, like, will you be my Doug? And I don't, like, this is like, what I'm
referencing Douglas Emhoff.
Yeah, yeah. And mind you, at this point, all of this stuff with Ukraine had already started. There had not been a single statement made about that. But there's
And I think something else had just happened, like, too, right?
Huh?
Something else had just happened, too, because I remember people were like, this is not the time to be posting it, especially since one of them said, like, get you a person who delivers for you like the Democrats do. Oh
my God. Yeah, and it's like, when? When have you delivered?
At what time, please? Receipts.
It's like, it's crazy to me that, like, an entire political party has an official Instagram account to begin with.
1 minute, let me just pull this up again so I can examine the...
It's just... I mean, sure, do your social media outreach and, like, whatever. Utilize that bully pulpit strategy, I guess. But, like, it's just
Look
weird.
At you using
it's
your just... AP government terms.
It's just, it's, I can't even explain it. And then you have Modi talking about some lip-syncing girls and saying, like, that's what the future youth should aspire to do. Like, I don't know what's
Okay, going I have on. To, I pulled up this post again, and I have to read you this caption, because I think I'm going to throw up. Roses are red, violets are blue. Share the love with our Valentine's Day cards. We made them just for you. Happy Valentine's Day. The first one is a picture of Kamala, and it says, you're the MVP of my heart. Stop. Stop.
I don't want to think about this.
Someone in the comments said, I shit you not, this is literally the worst thing I've ever had the displeasure of looking at. Please delete this immediately.
It's like, if anything, you guys are actually pushing people away from your party platform.
Yeah,
like
I feel like they're trying to do
like
the
jokes.
Yeah, they're trying to do the messaging that like the Republicans always do so well, but it's just, it's not good.
This is like, again, a very serious topic, but even from the way like you hear Putin talk about the situation, to be honest, he sounds like a little bit like a psycho 5-year-old who is just he's just like willing to pick a fight with anyone on the playground. You get what I mean? He doesn't even seem like he wholeheartedly wants to go through with this invasion the way he talks about it.
He seems like tired, like annoyed. Like,
I don't, it's like, it's, I can't even explain it, because you just see, I don't know, Ukraine is just like, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor. Ukraine is basically, like, just the underdog in every possible situation. And no one's paying attention to them. The U.S., they're sending each other, the political parties in the U.S. are sending each other Valentine's messages. Okay, Modi over there, leader of the second largest, no, the biggest democracy in the world, the second largest populist country in the world, is talking about some lip-syncing girls. Okay, Putin himself just seems so exhausted. And I'm not, like, sympathizing with him at all.
Yeah.
But this just seems, like, so forced.
No, it's just how he
seems. No, it just seems so forced.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you have children, family, like, the elderly, who are just suffering from everything that's actually going on in the country. And then not to even talk about, like, the environmental effects of the radiation I was talking about earlier. Like, that's... I can't even talk about it in a serious way. Because it just seems so...
Yeah.
Laughable. Sci-fi, really movie-like. Like...
Laughable, but not... I mean, to be clear, we are not saying that it's, you know...
And also, it is a privilege to even say it is a situation that seems from afar laughable. because we're not there. We're here at home on our asses and talking about it with like 50 articles pulled up because we have access to the internet. Like, it just sounds
Here's details on what I said earlier. So this is a passage from the New York Times. It says there have been reports all day, and this was posted 2 hours ago by someone reporting from Kyiv in Ukraine. And it says there have been reports all day that Ukraine and Russia would hold talks on the conflict. And now a lawmaker from Zelensky's faction, I don't even know how to say his last name, David A., I'll just say, confirms that Ukraine has agreed to meet Russia with no conditions. There were no immediate details on who would meet or where, but Belarus said that Ukraine had agreed to hold talks with Russia on the Belarus-Ukraine border. So these talks that are going on, right, it's you know, there's no one to say, right, we're not qualified to say, especially that, you know, these talks aren't going to, you know, work or do anything. But, like, it feels like people are, you know, losing their homes still. People are dying, right, and a literal invasion is taking place. And, again, it just feels like no one is helping. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I feel like it's like performative activism, but on like a much bigger platform, right? Because
on a presidential scale.
Yeah, on the presidential scale, because there it's more about like conflict deviation than conflict resolution, if that makes sense. They're sort of trying to they feel this pressure to make a statement and to take action. So instead they're just, you know, going out in front of the press and holding conferences and making sort of blank white statements that don't really mean anything and that are definitely not productive or
that's
helpful.
A really good point. Yeah.
Well, but and it's that's, sort of and, to get them time, like, you know, buy them time.
And that's exactly what you said. That's the same sort of thing with like these sanctions, right, that the U.S. is putting on Russia. Okay, absolutely. Well, these aren't a deterrent from people losing their lives and homes, right? These are, we would hope, a preventative measure from, you know, the conflict escalating even further. But, like, what does that do to help anyone, like, anywhere? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Another thing that I wanted to just say quickly, because I know I keep trying to emphasize sort of just how serious this could get, is, like, we know what Russia is capable of. We've seen it throughout history. You know what I mean? And it's like this very well can escalate to a full blown out nuclear war. Russia is capable of that. Putin is very much capable of that. In fact, he's been talking about it for years.
And he just talked about it this morning.
Fact, so like,
with his nuclear advisors, whatever those are.
Mm-hmm. And you have like cyber attacks and sort of Russian intelligence seeping into communication and informational assets. Like, it's crazy what's going on. And I feel like some part of me is just sort of like dumbfounded by everything. And I'm just kind of like, I can't believe this is happening. But I very much can't, because, you know, it's always, I feel like all the arrows have pointed towards this said. For forever now. But it's like.
Right. Right.
There's just so much going on. There's like too much going on.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I mean, imagine, like, again, like you said earlier, we're so privileged to be talking about it here, right? Imagine what those, you know, Ukrainians are going through.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
I think we have reached the crux of it, which is just that, you know, stay on top of this, because it's very important that people do stay informed, because, you know, it just is. And again, a reminder, we will be donating all of our AdSense from this episode to uahospitals.org. We will, you know, tag them or link them or whatever we can on Instagram. And please, you know, if you can donate on your own as well to other independent NGOs. And yeah, just stay on top of it.
I was also just quickly wanting to add that I had a conversation with someone earlier this week. And like, I just wanted to say really quickly, that because we talk about it a lot on this podcast, that it literally is as simple as caring about these things. You don't have to, you know, avidly post on social media. You don't have to make like huge public statements about it. Like, it's as simple as sending a letter or an email to your governor, your representative, your senator. It's as simple as signing a petition. It's as simple as donating. Like, that's what we say. Exactly.
Just like stay aware.
Like, it's, no one is asking you. Yeah. It, like, I feel like sometimes maybe we come off as a little bit self-righteous, but it's like, it's like so easy to care. It's so easy to stay on top of things, especially if I feel like a lot of our audience are kids who are of our age, who go to the same schools that we go to, who take the same classes that we take, who are the same extracurriculars, who hail from the same sort of familial background. So it's like, if like people can take time out of their day to care, then like you can too. You know what I mean? I feel like there's a lot of people right now who are just sitting on their ass, and they are happy to pass homophobic statements, Islamophobic statements, say sort of whatever they want about what's going on in Russia and Ukraine without being educated. And that, like, makes you such a shitty person. And it's so easy to care.
Right.
Like,
yeah. You suck.
Exactly. You do suck. And it's, like, so easy to care. I wouldn't know why you wouldn't want to stay aware. Or better yet, don't pass any statement at all. Like, don't say anything if you don't know anything about it.
Yeah. Well, alas, we've come to the end of an episode, and we have ended on yet another sort of depressing reality.
It's sort of a sob story, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. So again, don't forget our AdSense will be going to that hospital fund. And thank you for listening.